This meeting is being recorded.
There we go. All right. And then finally, our second piece of housekeeping. I just since we're here at the beginning of a new August, let's go around the room and just say your name. We have some faces who are familiar faces and faces who are relatively new. So, Bruce, would you introduce yourself and Cheryl? Just say your names and your favorite flavor of ice cream. There we go.
Oh my. Bruce Pototsky. What do you think my favorite is?
Rocky Road.
Probably Rocky Road.
How about you, Cheryl?
Cheryl Pototsky. Gosh, just about every ice cream flavor.
Everything. Everything.
Everything.
Going to Jennifer.
Jennifer Fenner, salted caramel ice cream.
Thank you. Some of you know Jennifer as Jenny, but we also have another member of this Bible study who is Ginny with a G. So here I always refer to Jennifer as Jennifer. So thank good to have you, Jennifer. Nabil, how about you?
Nebirna, I don't like ice cream. It is sweet.
Thank you, Nabil. Sandy.
Sandy Graff, and I like cherry vanilla.
Very vanilla. Linda and Scott.
And Ziggy.
And Siggy.
Yeah.
Oh, I love, yeah.
Well, I'm Scott Norton, and I like mustard ice cream.
Mustard.
Mustard.
Take vanilla ice cream and a little bit of Gouldens.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Linda, how about you?
Yes. I love all ice cream. Yeah.
All
If
ice
there's
cream.
ice cream, I'm
I think
there.
my grandfather
All
was.
right. And Sue, how about you?
Mint chocolate chip.
Ooh, mint chocolate chip. Yeah, that sounds delicious. I'm Pastor Mark. Oh, go ahead, Bruce.
Cheryl,
Love to
always
eat black walnut.
I correct myself. It's black walnut.
Thank you. Good. Good.
That's
I'm
my
glad.
favorite.
I was
And you
sweating
see,
over
it's
here.
really helping my memory.
I'm trying to. I asked the question. So I'm Pastor Marcus. A good pistachio. I really love a good homemade pistachio. Well, we are here in the Gospel of Luke at chapter 18, verse 1. And I want to give you all just a little bit of some of the context as we jump back into this. Part of this Bible study, we just take the text at the pace that is most comfortable. So while I do generally try to, get us through maybe half a chapter or maybe even a full, I think sometimes we've had a full chapter. If there's good, rich conversation and we're digging in, my philosophy is why rush, right? This is a gracious conversation. Jesus has been here in the Gospel of Luke. We have Jesus, let's see, I've got a little feedback. There we go. Jesus has been telling parables and stories. He has been giving some sermons. He has been insulting Pharisees to their faces, making no friends. We've seen Jesus heal. Luke's gospel, one of the jokes that we've had about Luke's gospel that I keep coming back to is that in Luke's gospel, Jesus is either eating or coming or going from a meal. Really, Jesus is almost always going to or from or at some kind of banquet or dinner or talking about a banquet. I mean, Luke is almost obsessed with food and telling stories around food. So here we are at the beginning of chapter 18, and we've been hearing these stories about the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God is among us. The kingdom of God is coming. Jesus saying, "Hey, with me, the kingdom of God is here." So that's kind of where we've been, and some of this even fits into some oh, kind of apocalyptic sort of imagery. So that those are the things that are sort of floating around as we get in here. So let's just jump into the text. I would like now, before I say this, our pattern is usually to have somebody read the gospel or read the Bible for us, read it aloud, and we all have different versions of the Bible. I'm not going to stick one up on the screen for us all to share. So just keep that in mind as you're hearing your translation. Your particular Bible might be a different translation than the one a friend reads aloud. So with that, I've said enough. Who would like to read chapter 18, verse 1 through 8? 1 through 8. All right, Jennifer, thank you so much.
And I'm reading from the Phillips translation, J.B. Phillips. I've got new reading glasses too, so pardon me here. Then he gave them an illustration to show that they must always pray and never lose heart. Once upon a time, he said, there was a magistrate in a town who had neither fear of God nor respect for his fellow men. There was a widow in the town who kept coming to him, saying, please protect me from the man who is trying to ruin me. And for a long time he refused. But later he said to himself, although I don't fear God and have no respect for men, yet this woman is such a nuisance that I shall give judgment in her favor, or else her continuing visits will be the death of me. Then the Lord said, notice how this dishonest magistrate behaved. Do you suppose God, patient as he is, will not see justice done for his chosen who appeal to him night and day? I assure you, he will not delay in seeing justice done. Yet when the Son of Man comes, will he find men on earth who believe in him?
All right. Thank you, Jennifer. So the question I always ask to get conversation rolling is, what words, what images, what phrases are you drawn to? What popped out to you for any reason? This could be because you thought it was funny, or because it struck you as strange, or because you had never heard it before, or hearing it for the first time, or you want to make a comment about it. So, what words, images, phrases? Yeah, go ahead, Nabil.
Here is mentioned, I didn't know why, pray and not lose your heart.
Pray,
The
where are you seeing that?
second line, to pray always to pray and not lose your heart.
Yeah, what do you make of that, Nabil? What is that, what does
Because
that say?
when I go to church sometime, I saw people, they praying, but they're thinking somewhere else, their heart not with the Jesus to pray. Also, they're thinking what he's going to do after the church or about that. And don't really, when they pray, they don't pray from their heart.
Well, that's an interesting sort of take on don't lose heart. When I think of not losing heart, I think of more like hopelessness, right? So to lose heart is to feel hopeless. But here you're saying there's a way of understanding that is to be committed or to be mindful while praying. That's very interesting. Thank you. Thanks, Nabil. So that's one of the ways Jesus or that the gospel writer Luke is setting up this parable. Luke is telling us, Jesus is telling a parable about praying and not losing heart. So the persistence of prayer in a way. Yeah. What else? Where else do we, what other words or phrases or images in the text? Yeah, Scott, go ahead.
So I'm reading from the Apple version, and the line says, in a certain town there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And it just brings to mind the rich tapestry of characters in the book.
Yeah, definitely. So we don't get to know this judge's name, right? And in some ways, well, there's some debate about this. And Scott, I'm kind of curious about, so what impression are you left with of this judge, right? Like, well, if you could paint a portrait, what's the look on his face? What do you think about this guy?
I can't decide. I either love him or hate it, and I'm not right there yet.
It's actually ambiguous. I think it is in the text. It's almost one of these things. Well, kind of like the shirt you were wearing the other day, right? Where you Scott was wearing this shirt where if you look at it, the image sort of melded into itself. So one thing you could see was what, a bird, and the other thing was, what was the other thing on your shirt, Scott?
Was like a takeoff on an Escher print that started with fish and went to fowl. So it
Yeah, fish and
was.
fowl. Yeah, that judge is kind of like this, I think, right? Depending on who you are, you may think that this judge is just a fine guy. You may also think that he's the kind of person who mistreats widows and orphans, right? I think we bring some of ourselves to this, and we see in some ways, not what we want, but we bring our own predispositions to this parable. That's
Do
one
you?
of the That's one of the kind of fun things about this. Oh, go ahead, Sue.
Do you think he might be arrogant?
That's one of the things that I think. What would lead you to say that, Sandy?
Well, he had no fear of God. So then, if he didn't fear God, what did he fear? And he didn't respect man, he didn't respect the people that he was making decisions over. So where was he coming from?
That's a gr those are great questions. So this judge seems to think that he seems to think he's kind of the highest power, right? No fear of God and no respect for man. So he's not only a person who is important in community, but he thinks of himself as a person who's important in community. There's a little arrogance there. What else? Who else? Sue, I saw your hand. Go ahead.
Okay. One that could not be trusted.
Where do you get that?
I just, you don't know where he's going to come from. What direction he's going to come from. And his, I don't think his decisions are being made from the correct perspective. So therefore, I don't think he can really be trusted in his decisions.
Yeah, so Jesus does use the word. So in verse 6, Jesus says, listen to what the unjust judge says, right? So Jesus is kind of tilting, like, even though I think the judge is a little ambiguous here, Jesus does use the words, okay, this guy is an unjust judge, right? So Sue, I hear what you're saying. There's kind of a level of trustworthiness here that's in question. Sandy, I'm going to mute you while you answer that. Go ahead. So remember, a parable is a world unto its own, right? It's a teaching lesson that we are invited really to take parables and sort of turn them on their heads and try from a lot of different angles. Some are more more dimensional, multidimensional. Others kind of can read more as an analogy or a metaphor. But the goal here is to sort of interrogate a difficult topic or question, right? So let's kind of think about this. Let's look walk through this through the lens of like the logic of being a parable. So we have this judge. Can anybody, so we've kind of spelled out the judge a little bit. Can anybody give me a picture or an image of the woman, the widow in question? How would we, same question I ask of Scott, how would we, what's her portrait look like? What are her characteristics? Does anybody have any ideas or want to chime in on that? Yeah, Jennifer, go ahead.
Persistence.
Yeah,
Persistence. Yeah. Sue's nodding. Others, other
she's not going to let
characteristics.
it. That was my word for her.
Yeah, she's not going to let it slide. She's going to advocate with all she has, and so that she can do what she can. And then, I mean, it's one thing if we just like, oh, well, that's life. But if we also like, okay, this is really important, and I'm just not going to let up. Maybe especially because this guy's like, well, what's in it for me? So this judge, what's in it for me? He seems to have no stake in it. He doesn't care what the guy thinks. He doesn't care what the woman thinks. He doesn't care what God thinks. So that woman's like, well, I'm going to make his life a little irritating if he doesn't listen to me.
So like that you put it, I hadn't put it in those terms. He doesn't have a stake in it. He doesn't have a stake in it. And so in a way, Jennifer, I hear you saying, I'm going to give him a stake in this thing. His stake is going to be his self-interest. He's going to get me off of his back in a way, right? I'll persist until I get what I need. Now notice, so there's a couple really interesting things about this that I hadn't really noticed until I did a little digging into this, but notice we're not actually ever told if the widow's cause, let's say whatever this ruling is she wants from the judge, we're never told whether it's just cause. We don't know if she's right. Is she wrongly accusing somebody here of something? We don't know if she's been ruled against in a way she doesn't like, but now she's really banging down a door. That there's also some ambiguous information left out right there. Bruce, I see you're sort of nodding your head. I wondered if that rings any of your retired lawyer ears. You're looking for information here. What are you seeing about her? Go ahead.
Well, I think sometimes justice is not what we want. We want what we want, but that's probably in some cases not justice.
Interesting. And here's why, thank you for that. Here's another one of these ambiguities, and I don't I'm going to be honest with y'all. I think I'm leading us further into the dark than into the light with this one, but here's another one of these sort of I kind of delight in these ambiguities. The word in Greek for justice that is used here is the exact same word. We could also translate it vengeance.
Really?
So, our editors of our Bibles and the tradition of interpretation tends to want to talk about justice. And there's a lot of reasons why that's probably a very good interpretation. However, Jesus or Luke's telling of Jesus uses this word for justice that can just as easily mean vengeance. So now we have a widow who is seeking vengeance through the judge, who in effect is sort of using the judge to get vengeance on her neighbor. The plot thickens. And so there's that ambiguity. Now, here's the reason I think we should maybe side with the widow, and I'm going to lead us out of the woods here. Jennifer, did I see your hand go up there?
Just
Or
finish
Sue?
your thought, and it might
Yes.
be the same thing I
Oh,
was going to say.
Okay. All right. So in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew Bible, there is this fourfold pattern of those who God has an extra pair of eyes for, essentially. And these people are the orphan, the widow, the outsider, or the foreigner, the orphan, the widow, The Foreigner and now I'm embarrassed. I can't remember the last one. Oh, The Poor and The Poor. So The Poor, The Widow, The Orphan, The Outsider, and any reader of this gospel parable, any listener in Jesus's day, remember Jesus is talking to a room full of Jews, and this is a parable about a Jewish community, and so the reader is probably coming with a predisposition towards seeing the widow as being somebody who society the reason in the Old Testament that God pays extra concern for the widow, the outsider, the poor, and the orphan is because those are the
As
ones
those
who
are the
are
ones.
without protective status in society, right? Those are the ones who are
Yes.
most easily forgotten in society. And so we hear that God sort of has an extra sense, an extra care, an extra preference for care for those people, and calls the Jewish community to also do that. So I do think that we're meant to be sympathetic to this widow. I do think we're meant to respond to her with some compassion, and not as I'm teasing that she's using this judge to get vengeance. But there are some interesting things here, kind of dynamics going around here. Okay, Jennifer and Sue, I wondered if that addressed what you were talking about. You first, Jennifer.
I was just going to point out that in the cultural context, widows were not treated well. They were really had such little status that, like, I would find it hard to think that, like, what status would she have?
None.
Why would anybody listen to her? You know, I mean, so I kind of push back against that. Like, we don't know what her intent or whatever. But she was a widow, and culturally speaking, you know, didn't have any sway over anyone.
I think you're right. I think I agree with you. Go ahead, Sue.
Okay, I'm playing a game with words here a little bit, where it says, we'll grant her justice. Because the question is, what she sees as justice, or is he granting her what he sees as justice? It can read either way, her justice, or bring her, you know, justice to her. I mean, I can look at it being going two different directions.
So that's really fascinating. I think what is meant, at least in my reading, is I'll grant her the thing that she's asking, right? But here again, see, we're kind of now we're turning this parable over in our hands, right? We're doing this, and that's exactly what we're meant to be doing, by the way. This is even though we're taking some fun sort of rabbit holes and going in and out of the woods, I think Jesus is intentionally crafting something that allows us to do that. The straightforward reading might be a right reading, but it also the exercise of digging into these different ideas. What is justice? Who defines what justice is? Is justice just vengeance? Is justice just what one person wants? Those are the things that we're supposed to be asking. And that's the rich conversation that the rabbis, when rabbis tell parables, it's not just Jesus who uses parables. Those are the kinds of things that we are meant to be discussing. So we have this one reading, which is, I guess I'll call the traditional reading, right? The good widow who has been wronged, and she's knocking on the door of the judge for justice, and she needs a ruling, and she gets it. Then we have a second reading here, which is the underhanded widow who is who just wants vengeance on her neighbor, and she persists and knocks on this judge's door. She uses the mechanisms of the law to do wrong by her neighbor. In both cases, even though I think the first one is probably more correct, and I do really sincerely think that. In both cases, let's kind of step back and say, okay, so what's the lesson of the parable? What is one of the outcomes? I think we've already said it, but let's say it again. What's the lesson of this parable? Yeah, Scott, go ahead.
Before we get to the lesson of the parable, it's amazing how well it ages, because this is taken right out of contemporary news. Here's a judge that either wants to do what he wants, but he's afraid to do so because he's going to get killed. He's a priest, he's going to attack him. And so, what does that say to how well this ages? Anyway.
That's a great point. I really appreciate that. Yeah, this is it's an expansive enough story that we can map this onto events in culture that we've found today, right? Of the way that authority through what judicial power can be used and abused by certain plaintiffs or certain prosecutors or certain interests. That kind of gets me back to Jennifer's point about holding a stake in something. The way that people can manipulate the outcome of the thing that they hold a stake in by way of the law, by way of the judge and jury, or by way of a judge. Yeah, thanks for that. So this is a timeless kind of expansive issue. Yeah, go ahead, Nabil. Thanks, Scott.
As you mentioned about everything about the widow and about the judge and judgment, everything. But what is this relation with the last night, a line when they say, nevertheless, when the Son of the Man comes, will he find faith on earth?
Great question. Hold that question. We're going to get to that in just a minute.
Okay.
Hold on to that question. If I move on before that, you keep me to it. Sandy, go ahead. Yeah.
Can we kind of relate this back to pray and not lose heart? Because she is a widow with an issue and she is not losing heart. She is continuing on to get the justice she needs. And when we're instructed to pray and not lose heart, we're being instructed, I think, to continue to go to God with our requests, with our prayers, with our needs, and not lose heart if there isn't an answer immediately. And that's kind of what's happening with this woman. She's not losing heart. She's continuing to go to this judge with her issue, trying to get it resolved, and she's not giving up on it.
Thank you, Sandy. So the story begins with Luke telling us, I'm going to tell you a story about praying and not losing heart. He tells us this story. And then, as Nabil brought us, at the end, Jesus says, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? So there's something, I guess I want to sort of tie those things together. This is a device, right? You start with it, you tell a story, you come back to it. I think we ought to read those things almost together as a couple, right? To say there is something about faith that looks like what this woman is doing. Right? There is something, and let me just tell another story, actually, because I think this is a really, there are different ways that people interpret what faith is. I have a very, very close friend up in Washington State who is the most delightful human being in the world. And for her, I don't know why, but somehow in her mind, faith is, and I think it was something to do with her upbringing and things like that. But her faith has, at the worst of times, I'm not going to say the best of times, the worst of times, expressed itself as being very small, right? Being sort of inoffensive and quiet. And she knows that that's not exactly who she wants to be in the world, but given some past family trauma and things like that, sometimes her faith in a way almost diminishes her. Or she says to herself, well, to be a good Christian person is to not cause trouble in the world. So I don't want to cause trouble. I have to be nice. That's what Christianity tells me I have to do. Mind you, this person grew up in a very a community where women were not really allowed to speak and things like that. But it's hard for her to learn a different way about what faith might be. Sandy, I'm glad you brought that up. What if the thing that Jesus is talking about here at the end, what if faith looks like what this persistent widow is bringing to the table, right? What if that's a piece of what faith is? This persistence, this drive, this pounding on a door in the middle of the night saying, hey, judge, you can't do that. Don't treat me unjustly. Jesus is saying, yeah, be like this widow. Or I don't know, what do y'all think of that? Is Jesus saying, be like this widow? Is that one of the lessons? Go ahead,
Maybe.
Jennifer.
Oh, go ahead, Sandy.
Maybe what he likes about her is her persistence. She's not going to lose heart. She's going to continue to ask until there's an answer. It may not be the answer she wants, but she's going after an answer, after some justice, some help, which may not be going her way.
Okay.
The
So the
judge
ambiguity.
may say no, just like sometimes when we pray, the answer doesn't come back the way we actually want it. It comes back in a different form.
I appreciate that. Jennifer, go ahead.
Well, I agree with Sandy about the persistence there, and I think it's also like, yeah, keep praying for justice in for your own situation, and for heaven's sake, for the world, for widows, for orphans, for the poor. And talk about timeless. Yes, this is very, very relevant, and it can be disheartening to continue to try to work for pray for justice, to rally and to advocate for things. And so this is telling us, Jesus is telling us that God will bring justice, but the thing is, people will mess it up. And so when God comes, when the Son of Man returns, will people still have faith in God, even though people have messed it up?
Oh, that's an interesting. Bruce, I want you to jump in and then I'm going to explore that a little further. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that God's grace, we don't always understand what God's grace is, and we don't maybe even agree with how come it isn't what we wanted that person to have to go through or have to do. I mean, we people are different, and it's always interesting to find out what's good for people in God's eyes. And maybe we may not even agree with that.
So that's really fascinating to me that we're kind of coming into this. Sandy, you raised this, and I think I heard Jennifer, and now Bruce. It sounds like we have some experience in the room. I don't want to put any words in your mouth here of praying for some of knocking on that door, and not necessarily receiving the justice we wanted, or the thing that we wanted to happen. And I'm kind of hearing that a little bit around the room. Sandy, you're nodding. And so how does this parable Does this parable speak to that situation? It might not. It might not speak to that. I know that I've had that experience, right? I pray for somebody who's in the hospital, very close. I've used this example before. Close friend of mine had stage 4 breast cancer as a 33-year-old, and I prayed. A lot of us prayed. She was the daughter of a bishop. You better believe people were praying, and she died. And we have this question of God, where was the outcome we were looking for? Where was the thing that we wanted to have happen? It sounds like there are others in the room who have some experience with this. I'm wondering, what do you think the parable, what do you think Jesus's parable says to that situation, or says to a person like me who says, God, where were you in that? I was looking for you. Jennifer, yeah, go ahead.
I don't think they're really they're related, but this is a different kind of praying, a different kind of situation. In this situation, we're talking about people who have a certain control or a way of influencing an outcome. Like with cancer, it is a thing like I do believe and have, of course, prayed for people who are ill and always and not always with the outcome that I would have chosen. But in this situation, in this parable, we're talking about praying for justice. And I pray for justice every single day, and I have not received the answers that I would like in many situations. I've seen movement in some situations, but again, I'm thinking about what we're in this situation, in this parable, it's about what people have control over, appealing to those who have power. So this judge had power, this widow had none. The man who was trying to ruin her had power. And so I think that's a different kind of prayer and a different kind of persistence.
I really appreciate that. And what I would hear, another kind of one thing that I hear in that, Jennifer, is what a gift to have multiple parables, right? That every parable is a world unto its own, but every parable may not give us the answer to every riddle in the world, right? Every parable may speak to a particular dynamic, right? So if I hear you right, I hear you saying, this one seems to be dealing with relationships between people and the kinds of possibilities for wrongdoing or justice making things right that exist between people in relationships. Am I paraphrasing that in an okay way?
And like, so if an election doesn't go my way, I'm not supposed to just give up.
Ah, yeah. Okay. That's good. Anybody else want to jump in here? Scott and Linda, I saw you were unmuted there for a minute and then muted again. How about you?
Well, it kind of leads, I'm not quite sure how it leads to it, but what comes to mind is the old wish there, may you get what you want, not what you deserve. I'm not sure how that ties in, but it just comes to mind.
Well, and to me that speaks of, again, and maybe this is a lesson that I could learn, in my prayer life, is the lesson here is still persistence, right? Whether we're talking about an election not going my way or a diagnosis. The lesson, I think, at the end is maybe still the same, to pray and to be knocking on that door without losing heart, right? I love Sandy brought us back to that phrase, not to lose heart. There's all sorts of ways, there's a million and a half reasons, including what we deserve. There's a million reasons why we may not get what we want. Or things might go against us. And yet there is this invitation to not lose heart. Now, I want to just go ahead, Nabil. Go ahead.
As you mentioned about the before about the faith, okay? Now, I think this widow, she has no faith. If she has a faith, she didn't come to knock the door and she wanted everything from the judge.
Say more about that. I'm not quite following.
I think you mentioned about the faith, and we show the relationship, the faith with this parabola, okay? Parable. But the, I think, if I'm wrong, the woman, the widow, she has no faith. If she has faith, she didn't come to the to knock the door on the judge and she want everything from him.
So you're really turning this thing upside down, Nabil, which is what I've asked you to all do. So if I hear you correctly, you're saying, oh, no. This widow, because she's taking things into her own hands, that's not faith. You're saying if she had faith, this would all be sorted out apart from her, right?
Yes.
Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, I want to invite some other folks into that, that conversation. So, Sue, I can see the wheels in your mind turning. Go ahead. Give us your thoughts on that.
Hadn't thought of that direction.
Yeah.
At all. I was looking at it basically on the persistence in prayer.
So I picked on you, Sue. So is there anybody else... anybody else who has kind of a, that's an interesting idea or a remark on Nabil's interpretation?
Well, in the last, in verse 8, it says, I tell you, he will give justice to them speedily. So what does that speedily refer to? Speedily. And then, so how does that tie into what was just discussed?
Well, this is a great question. So the question, I think, to answer, you're doing exactly this, to say, okay, well, we have this possibility for how we might interpret this. What kind of evidence do we have for Nabil's turning this thing on its head, really turning on its head? And I think, Sandy, what you're pointing to is maybe a counter argument, right? If this is the reason, why would Jesus have made this remark at the end, right? So in a way, verse 7, and Abiel, this would be, I think, maybe a challenge to your reading, is verse 7. Will not God grant justice to his chosen ones who cry to him day and night? So there seems to be this, this parallel between... the ones who are the chosen ones, that's just a word for followers of God or followers of Jesus. I wouldn't get too hung up on that. So there's a parallel between the chosen ones or the elect or followers and this woman. So that would be, and Sandy, you've sort of pointed this out, that would be maybe the evidence to the contrary. Not to say that the exercise of turning it over isn't a good one, right? Because it does help us to say, what does faith mean? Does faith mean that, this is a great example. I mean, to bring it back to what Jennifer said. Some people say that faith and politics need to be worlds apart, right? I should pray, but I should never pray about who... I'm a private citizen here, not Pastor Marcus. In my prayer life, I should just let democracy be democracy and let faith be faith, and ne'er the two shall meet. This parable, I think, would seem to encourage, no. Everything in our life as it pertains to justice, if something has to do with justice, let prayer be a possibility there, right? Knock on that door. Let it be a part of how you go about seeking justice in the world. That's kind of one of the ways that I might push back, Nabil, and to say, nah, I don't know if that's faith to just sit back and wait. Sometimes faith, I think, is persistence. Yeah, go ahead, Sue.
I'm just thinking sometimes I can't say she had no faith, but there are times we question our faith. And it's not quite as strong. At this point, her faith may not have been as strong as it could be, but she felt she needed to go forth. And that's where it was leading her.
You're talking about the
Yeah.
widow, yeah, and
Yeah.
her persistence.
And her persistence.
Yeah.
Her and her faith may her faith was there, but it may not have been as strong as it always had been. She may have been questioning, am I going to get justice?
Yeah. Well, everybody, this has been a fabulous conversation. And one of the things that I always am just impressed with this group is that somehow we always manage to tug out all the little details of these parables that the books on my shelf spend, you know, chapters and chapters tugging out. This is really important stuff. So thank you. I want to move on to the next parable. I'm mindful of the clock that we've only really got a few minutes. We like to close in prayer. We like to collect up some prayers. I kind of want to tease this parable a little bit. I definitely want to save this and have a lengthy conversation about it next week. So we're not just going to blow through this one because it's very important. But let's read it, and this way we can kind of sink our teeth in a little bit this week, see the lay of the land, and then we're going to come back to it next week. I think they call this a cliffhanger in the business. So who would like to read verses 9 through 14? 9 through 14. There in Luke's Gospel, chapter 18.
Cheryl.
Go ahead, Bruce. Yeah.
Cheryl was went
Cheryl's
first.
coming.
Yeah, here she's. Yeah, I was raising my hand for
Okay. I need
Cheryl.
to take it away, Cheryl.
I'll trade places with you.
That sounds great.
I think I got volunteered.
You did. Voluntold.
Okay,
there we go.
To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'm going to ask this again next week, but let's tease this out a little bit. Words, images, phrases that strike you today in hearing this parable, maybe strike you afresh or tug at you. Go ahead,
Juxtaposition.
Scott. Yeah.
Juxtaposition.
Of what? Say more about that.
Those who are humbled shall be exalted.
Yeah, so we have these two characters, right? The Pharisee and the tax collector. I'm going to say a little bit more about that just to give you all something to think about over this week. A Pharisee, remember, Jesus is speaking to a Jewish audience here, and as much as the self-righteousness of Pharisees kind of rubbed everybody the wrong way, you know, the Pharisee is an upright citizen of the community. The Pharisee's a law-abiding, tax-paying, tithe-paying, right, is a good member of the community. I want to give you this information. A tax collector is not just, we're not just talking about an IRS agent here, right? We're not talking about a guy who went to accounting school who's now in charge of collecting everybody's taxes. A tax collector is an agent of the Roman Empire who is looked upon as a collaborator with the enemy, right? And somebody who's stabbing his neighbors in the back, right? Like, how dare you collaborate with these Roman tax collectors? And we also know from other historical sources that tax collectors would do this thing where maybe my bill should be $100, but the tax collector comes around and says, "Oh no, your bill is $200," right? And what does the tax collector do with that difference in money? Well, they keep it
Thanks.
themselves. And this is a well-known thing. So not only are they collaborators with the enemy occupiers, the Roman occupiers, but they're cheats, right? They're scoundrels, and anybody, and they're rich scoundrels also, and then untouchable in their wealth. So sort of, the kind of person who a lot of everyday people would have had a tremendous beef with. This is a, I'm going to leave it here and then we're going to collect up some prayers. This is a sort of a scandalous parable here. I know we've probably heard this over and over again in our time as people going to church, or maybe you haven't heard it over and over again. It's a well-known parable, but it's scandalous. I want to bring that up before we leave to say, Jesus's audience, as people heard this, may have been very surprised to hear that the Pharisee, or I'm sorry, the tax collector, not the Pharisee, is the one who goes home justified. That's kind of an earth-shattering conclusion. So there's our cliffhanger. If I had a to be continued screen to share, I would. Da, 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 to be continued. But we're going to pick it up there next week. Our pattern here is I'm gonna say goodbye to those folks who are with us on our recording, and then we're gonna have some prayer. So thanks for being with us if you're with us on YouTube or on our audio recording.